Good morning. You're listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two of the attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm. We are here each Saturday morning, some combination of the firm's estate planning partners, and talk to you, chat with you, get some good information to you about estate planning, estate administration, asset protection planning, all those good things, wills, trusts, advanced directives. So we would love to talk to you on this day before Easter. Happy Easter, everybody. Happy Passover. This year, they actually fell about the same time, right?
Very similar, yeah.
Definitely. Sometimes they're way far apart. Anyway, the number here at Magic 590, if you would like to be our first caller, is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Outside the local calling area, we have some folks out of town who listen to us on a regular basis. You can reach us at 1-800-WROW-590.
You know, day before Easter, tomorrow, all the good food.
Oh, I know. I know. We're, you know what we're doing this year? Mara said, okay, enough Easter dinners. Enough Easter dinners. This
right.
year, okay, we're going up to Fresh Market and get the, you know, the ham. There's like a 10-pound
ham. Oh, yeah.
The vegetables, the potatoes, it's all comes in a little box. And, it's you know, so we're going to do that.
I was there actually last night. They had a lot of grab-and-go stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, just go there and you're like, mm-hmm. oh, that
right.
looks good.
Definitely.
Don't go hungry.
No. Nobody in our house ever goes hungry. That's for sure. Anyway. We had a, actually, you were, I wasn't there, but you and Dave and Jay Marie participated in an Alzheimer's caretaker conference this week, didn't you?
Yeah, the caregiver conference was over at the Marriott on Wolf Road. It was a great event. There were a lot of really, really good speakers, and Jay Marie being one of them. She spoke in the afternoon about basically getting community mm-hmm. Medicaid to pay for your care at home. And a lot of interesting questions. A lot of people that were there because their loved one had just been diagnosed.
So this was for, like, actual people who are taking care of a parent or mm-hmm. a spouse. It wasn't like for home health care agencies. It was like individuals who are, you know, who have this task in front of them, and they need help, support, guidance, information.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I ran into several of her clients
oh, yeah.
over there. And, you know, it was interesting that they were there, and then they were like, you know, we came in and saw you, and you said, you know, get out to these things and find out what's going on. And they have a lot of groups that you can join if you have someone that has Alzheimer's
mm-hmm.
to, like, a support group to find right. out. Because so you're not alone, because a lot of the stuff that you're going through is stuff that everyone else is too, and they can maybe give you a little right. bit of a hint as to what's going on.
And it's 'cause there's an ever-increasing amount of people who are having to deal with caretaking responsibilities. Often for, usually for a parent or spouse, and people don't know where to turn. They don't know what kind of information to get. So, you know, it's helpful, and we want you to know these things are out there. And you can always call the office and find out. We know when these events are taking place in the Capital District. We participate in many of them, and so if you're in that situation, and you want some support, you just want somebody to talk to once in a while about how to deal with it. These folks tend to develop over time what's called caregiver burnout.
Yes, definitely.
Because you need respite. I mean, one of the things we talk about is respite. There is respite available for even if you are caring for a parent. You know, if you're going away for 2 weeks on a vacation, there are respite services that might be available to take care of your parent or your spouse while you're away. So you don't have to worry about this stuff or cobble together a group of friends and neighbors who do that for you. So keep it in mind. Really important.
Yeah, on next weekend on Saturday, we're going to be at the Colony Center Mall.
Okay, what's going on there?
It's the 50 Plus Expo, I think, is
oh.
that one. And then we're going to be at Rivers Casino. I promise I'll actually be at the
Ooh.
Booth and not at the slot machine.
Will you actually be? Because I don't know where to find you. If I can't find you, I know where you will be.
So Rivers Casino on Sunday. Kim and I will be at Rivers Casino next Sunday.
And what's that?
That's the Boomer
senior?
Expo.
Oh, Boomer Expo.
Yes, that's the Boomer Expo. So Kim and I will be there next Sunday. And then on Saturday, I think Jay Marie is going to be at the Colony Center Mall, and we always figure you always kind of stop by and say hi. So we figured, you know, you might make a guest
next
appearance.
Weekend. Yeah, because I had gone, you know, I'm batched. My wife's going to Ireland on Thursday for a week with a friend of hers. So
there you go.
You know, I got nothing to do next weekend.
There you go. So on Saturday, if you want to run into the one and only Harry Miller, he may be at our booth at the Colony Center Mall. Yes. So that's what we've got planned for next weekend. We actually have seminars coming up in May. The first one is on Thursday, May 8th, and that's at 2 in the afternoon, and that one's in Kingston. And then we have, that one's actually on estate planning and Medicaid planning, and then we have a bunch coming up in May in the Albany-Saratoga area on wills versus trusts, and it looks like we have a caller.
We got there. Colleen out in East Greenbush. Hi, Colleen.
Morning, Colleen.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good.
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. I just wanted to say I'm a nurse. And part of my job is to review residents' advance directives. Mm-hmm. And I was reviewing one, and I was like, wow, this is absolutely great. Oh, my gosh, it has everything they need. Because sometimes I'll call the nurse and say, hey, can you check out this, that, or the other thing? Mm-hmm. But this was totally complete, and I got to the bottom, and it was Herzog Law Firm.
Well, that's always good to hear. Thank you very much.
That's great. We develop that. We review them from time to time. And it's actually short. It's short. It's like it's only two pages long. The other thing we did.
Everything.
Yeah. The other thing we did is we condensed. Some law firms have a separate healthcare proxy and then a separate living will. So you actually have to have two documents. We compressed it into one document, and so it's one less thing to lose or misplace. And I really appreciate you saying that. It's really great.
And I was really glad, because in this case, the person no longer has capacity, so it was all there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very important to address those issues. Particularly, and you know if you're a nurse, in New York State, if you want to specifically address tube feeding and hydration, you have to specifically mention those two things in your healthcare proxy or your living will. You have to authorize your agent to decline tube feeding or hydration if they determine that it's medically appropriate in consultation with your doctors. If it isn't there, and you doctor wants you to get a feeding tube, you might wind up getting a feeding tube, but he didn't want one. So
I know. I was just amazed at how wonderfully put together it is compared to others that I've read. Mm-hmm. It really is superior. So I just wanted to share that.
Wow, we really appreciate this. Always good, great to get good news early on a Saturday morning.
Yes, thank you, and happy Easter.
Happy Easter. Yeah, it's amazing what you can do with one little document, you know?
You need these things. There are... it's interesting because I recently had a situation in, not in this state, in Arizona. Now, in Arizona, interestingly enough, they have a healthcare proxy and a living will that is a different form. Part of the problem with state to state is, you know, there are 50 states, and you know what? There are 50 different kinds of healthcare proxies, and there's 50 different kinds of living wills. And there's no uniformity of documents. So, you know, if you're traveling in California with your New York healthcare proxy, something happens to you out there. It's okay. It's legally valid.
It's legal.
But they're not familiar with the form. So sometimes it can cause confusion or delay. But you can't have one for every state. That's not possible to do. Anyway, Arizona actually has something called a mental health power of attorney, in addition to a regular healthcare proxy for medical, you know, mm-hmm. physical medical things. There's a separate one, and it's slightly different. And I had... and this brings up this whole thing about this. I had a client out there who lives out there in the winter, and you know, her daughter called me like in February, and she said, "My mom's missing. Uh-huh. She's gone missing. She had a 2 o'clock dentist appointment in Scottsdale, and she never got there. So this was like the following day."
Did they do one of those, what is it, a gray alert?
Silver alert. Silver alert.
Close.
So they had issues. And we have silver alert in New York, too. It's an interesting program. So I want to make sure everybody knew about that because, where the heck is it? I have the thing here. But there is a silver alert in New York if somebody is missing. I mean, an amber alert's like for a kid.
Right, exactly.
We've all seen amber alerts and all those things go out. Well, a silver alert's for an older person who has some types of memory issue. They may have dementia, Alzheimer's, and they tend to occasionally wander away.
Mm-hmm.
Now this one was driving her car, you know, and just apparently got lost. So they issued the silver alert. They had found that she had actually tried to use her credit card at a gas station, because I think they give your credit cards and all these things. All the police are notified. Come to tell, the following evening, they found her driving her car along a highway, two or three counties away, 2.5 hours from her house.
Wow.
Okay. Said she made a wrong turn. She sure did.
Anyway, well, you said somebody gave her gas, right?
I think she must have talked somebody into just, you know,
filling up her tank, because her credit card wouldn't work.
I think what they did was they froze her credit cards as part of the silver alert.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing is, she didn't have a cell phone. Okay?
Not good.
Not good. This woman's 80 years old. I talked to her daughter. I said, doesn't your mother have a cell phone? She said, yeah, I bought her one several years ago, but she won't use it. Bad idea. Anyway, they found her safely,
mm-hmm.
and they brought her back, and she got the necessary treatment and things, and now she has the proper kind of care in her house in Arizona. But it's a real heads up for you family members who have relatives who have mid to late stage, you know, Alzheimer's, dementia. I mean, if you're in the mid to late stages, you probably shouldn't be driving anyway. But early warning signs we have to watch out for. So keep in mind that these programs exist, and it just points out, as the nurse who was our first caller said, the importance of having a comprehensive kind of medical proxy that describes these different events and the kind of courses of treatment that you might want in connection with those things.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those things where if you don't have the documents, then the only choice, if you don't have a power of attorney, is to go through guardianship if they don't have mental capacity, which is something you definitely don't want to have to do. Very expensive, very invasive.
Yeah, and largely unnecessary. It really is. See, what in New York, this thing, it's called the Missing Vulnerable Adult Alert. But that's basically the same thing. It's a silver alert. And now we're going to talk to Shirley and Troy. Hey, Shirley.
Hi, Shirley. How are you?
I'm great.
I have a couple of questions. I deeded my house over to my children, and I have a will with your firm.
Mm-hmm.
And my bank account, I thought I was putting on beneficiaries, but I guess they ended up as co-owners.
Oh.
And
well, you can change that if you want. Yeah.
How can you change it?
Well, they'd have to sign. Yeah, I mean, you could go into the bank with the kids who are on the account and switch it back to your name, payable on death to the kids.
Oh.
Yeah, you'd all have to do it. How many kids are there on the account?
Four.
Okay. Yeah, that's cumbersome.
Well, you might want to just open up. Do you have direct deposit in it?
Yes.
You might want to just open up a new account in your name with them as beneficiaries, and then have your direct deposits over to that account, and then once they start going into the new account, just close the old account.
Well, what happened was one of my children racked up some bills.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
And now they want to freeze, well, they did freeze part of my savings.
All right, that's a problem. Yeah.
And, you know.
So that's a problem when you actually put them on the account as opposed to making them a beneficiary. Now,
well,
when I
went there, they said I couldn't be a beneficiary. They said that they all have to be co-owners.
That's not correct.
Whoever
you
talked
to
at the
bank.
Yeah, they didn't know what they were talking about. You could put a beneficiary on any bank account. They just didn't know. In the future, you probably needed to hopefully it wasn't the branch manager. but no, now it's a serious problem because the kid that's on the account is a co-owner of the account, and, you know, it's frozen, and now you're going to have to deal with his or her creditors. Yeah.
Okay. Now, another question is,
also,
can they come after my house?
No, not unless he's on the house. Is
she
he
just said he was on the house, yeah.
He's on the deed?
Yes.
Potentially, yes. Although, yes. Yep.
Yep, they would get a judgment against him.
I mean, it would not interfere. I'm assuming you deed it to the children and retained the right to live in the house, right? So the lien that they would have against his interest as a creditor would not affect your, in other words, they couldn't kick you out of the house. you would still have the legal right to live in the house forever, all right? Because what your son and your other children own is a future interest. They will own the house after you pass away, but currently they have no interest that could be foreclosed, all right? But it's going to be a problem down the road that somebody's going to have to deal with. Is this a lot of money or a little bit of money? Or?
No, it's not an awful lot of money, but, you know, it's my bank account. It's what I use.
Know.
It's my Social Security and my IRAs.
If I were you, I would stop depositing money into that account immediately, all right?
Yeah.
And I'm not a debtor and creditor lawyer, so but you better get some assistance in how to proceed in that regard from somebody who handles debtor and creditor law.
And I can still keep them all on the house.
Well, you really don't have a choice. They would have to deed it back to you.
Yeah.
So, but as far as your account, I would open up a new account, have your direct deposit going into it, and if that bank can't do that, then you need to go to another bank, have it direct deposited into the account, and then put the kids on as beneficiaries, and then you'll kind of alleviate that problem with that account. And any other account that he's on, I would just close it out and open a new account.
Yeah, because if they've frozen the bank account, I mean, I don't know, I'm speculating here, so don't take any of this as legal advice.
They only froze part of it.
Well, his interest, but they must have a judgment against, somebody must have a judgment against him in order to garnish or levy against a bank account. He couldn't just do that. They must have sued him and got a judgment for what he owes them, I'm guessing. But
what she did was go to one of those companies that, you know, you pay so much a month and they pay your bills.
Oh.
Consumer.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A credit or something.
All right.
Yep.
Yeah, and so they've been doing that. So then all of a sudden this one decided that they wanted to get their money faster, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I would definitely get their name off everything. You can't do anything about the deed to the house, but everything else, I would close the account, do whatever I needed to get their name off of it.
Right, but they can't come after my house.
Not at the present time.
No, not the present time. They
down the road, possibly, if they're not paid off at some point. They will have a lien on the house. They just can't do anything about it as long as you're living in it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
All right.
And happy Easter.
Thanks.
Happy Easter.
Thanks.
You know, that happens a lot. And that's the thing that you got to realize when you put people joint on your accounts. I had a lady come in one day that said, I want to remove my son from all of my documents. And I said, okay.
Okay, what'd he do?
What'd he do? And she said she went into the bank to write a check. And they said, yeah, you don't have this much money in your account. And she said, no.
Oh.
I have over $30,000 in my account. And they said, no, you don't. And she said, yes, I do. And apparently he hadn't paid his taxes.
He borrowed some money from mom?
The IRS. No, the IRS took it.
Oh, the IRS took it.
Yeah, the IRS.
Yeah, you have to
take the money out of the account.
And let me just point out, because this woman, it sounds like she went to the bank and she really thought she was putting them on as beneficiaries. You don't necessarily know the subtle differences between these two things. So if you're not sure, call. You know, sometimes a client will call me from the bank.
Mm-hmm.
They'll actually call me from the bank, and I'll talk to the bank officer or the person who's setting up the account to make sure that it's being set up the way you want it to be, and not the way the person at the bank thinks it ought to be. Because these people aren't lawyers either. They're bankers. And sometimes they don't understand the legal differences between a joint account and an account that's payable on death. And that's a big difference in this situation where somebody on the account has some credit issues and owes some money, and now it's a problem that somebody has to deal with.
Yeah. It is, and that's the problem. Whenever you go into the bank, you have to realize that you're the customer and they're supposed to give you what you want. So you need to know what you want before you go in.
You have to actually remind them that it's your money,
exactly.
Not theirs.
I've had a few people that have called me and said, the bank won't do this, the bank won't do that. I'm like, then move your money.
Then close out the account and go to another bank.
Exactly.
That's what I tell people.
Whenever you go to the bank, you want it to be POD. That's payable on death, right? That makes it a beneficiary, means the person has no access to it until you pass away.
And also, you can change it. So
exactly.
If it's in beneficiary form, mom, payable on death or in trust for Susie, Billy, and Tommy, if Tommy has a problem, mom can go and take him off the payable on death.
Exactly.
Okay? Because the beneficiary, it's just like a beneficiary on a life insurance policy. You can change it anytime you want.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's POD, which is payable on death. It can be TOD, which is transfer on death.
Right.
And it can be ITF, which is in trust for.
Yeah, which is a terrible misnomer.
Because people think
they
have a trust.
It's not a trust. In trust for is what banks usually use, ITF. But it's not a real legal trust like we do for a lot of our clients. It's a way of passing money on death without a probate proceeding. So-called
exactly.
A Totten Trust.
Yes.
Named for Mr. Totten.
Mr. Totten.
Mr. Totten was a gentleman in the 1800s who didn't want to pay lawyers. Who does? Go figure. So he went to the bank and put his bank account in trust for, payable on death to, one of his children. And when he died, the executor of his estate claimed that the money in that account should come to the estate and pass through the will rather than directly to the child.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And so the case went to court. And guess what? Mr. Totten's kid got the money, not the executor. And so it came to be called a Totten Trust.
See? That's
but it's not a real live legal trust. It's a pretend trust.
It's a pretend trust.
It is.
So I got an email from one of my friends who I actually did a trust for. And she emails me because she's not in New York anymore. And she says, do I really need a trust? I've got my one son is my beneficiary and everything. When I die, he's going to get everything. Mm-hmm. Do I really need a trust now? And I said, it depends on what kind of assets you have. If you own a house, you need a trust. She's got long-term care insurance, so she doesn't need an irrevocable trust.
Right.
And so I said, okay, you've got your son as beneficiary and everything. What if you and your son pass away at the same time? So right. If you had, say, your son is beneficiary and everything, you had the trust as the contingent beneficiary, then you could put all kinds of different beneficiaries in the trust. You could name, because she does a lot of charitable stuff, you could name all your different charities, nieces, nephews, all that stuff. She goes, well, can't I just put those on my accounts? And I'm like, generally, brokers limit you to, you know, a few beneficiaries. So she goes, so I still do need my trust. And I'm like, yes, you still need your trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It creates so many different options, additional options, so much flexibility, and all those things. I had a similar experience this week. I had a client in the office who is, she is unmarried, but she's in a relationship with someone. She has no children. She's an only child. Her parents, her closest, and she has about 32 cousins.
Wow.
All right? A ton of cousins. And I said, you know, exactly. Shouldn't care about long-term care, all that other stuff. She's not particularly curious about that. But I said, probating your estate is going to be an absolute nightmare for the executor. And it's also going to cost a fortune.
Mm-hmm.
Because the court is going to make us try to find all these 32 cousins, half of which you haven't seen in 30 years, or don't mm-hmm. even know where they are. But we're going to have to try to find them. And that's good. And there are companies that do this, and they do a very good job, but they're very expensive. And you could easily spend 10, 20, 25,000 bucks finding missing heirs to serve with notice of an estate that they're not even participating in. And a trust eliminates that.
Right. I started thinking about that. I try to think about all my cousins. All my cousins on my dad's side, I know where they all are. But the cousins on my mom's side, her brother's kids.
Yeah.
You never see them
in 20 years, probably. Maybe more, you know. You don't have any contact with them. They're not, you know, like most, you know. If you have a lot of brothers and sisters, your parents had a lot of brothers and sisters, come from a big family, this is where these problems are. My family's simple. My mother was an only child. My father had one brother. So my world of cousins is quite small.
Well, my mom had one brother, and he had three children from three different marriages.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
there you go.
And we have no idea where they are.
A little mix and mash.
Yeah,
there.
So he passed away a long time ago, and then my dad had eight brothers and sisters.
Oh, my heavens.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there's quite a few cousins out there.
This is like my wife's family. Her her grandmother, there were like eight or nine, and her grandfather, they were like eight or nine in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And they were huge families. They absolutely were enormous. And then I thought it was funny because her mother's an only child. They decided only one. Let's decide the family wasn't all that. Let's see. What else? Oh, we got a couple of minutes up to the news. We have seminars. Well, we do.
We have seminars
in about
in May.
3 weeks or so.
We have one in Kingston that's May 8th at 2 in the afternoon. That one's on estate planning and Medicaid planning, and that's at the 1835 Ulster Avenue in Lake Katrine, New York. Isn't it usually? We usually have it someplace else. That's interesting. I'm used to saying Frank Sotile Boulevard.
Which hotel does it say?
Holiday Inn Express in Kingston, 1835 Ulster Avenue in Lake Katrine.
That's a new one.
Okay.
I'll have to check with Stacy on that one.
Harry's just looking at me going, I don't know. Okay. And then around here, we've got, they're going to be Wills versus Trust, which is usually a fun one. That's Tuesday, May 14th at 2 in the afternoon. That's the Holiday Inn Express in East Greenbush. Wednesday, May 15th at 6:30 in the evening at the Hampton Inn in Clifton Park. Thursday, May 16th at 10 in the morning at the Queensbury Hotel at 88 Ridge Street in Glens Falls.
Mm-hmm.
And Thursday, May 16th at 2 in the afternoon at the Courtyard by Marriott on Washington Ave in Albany. So those are our seminars that are coming up in May. And then we won't have seminars again till August.
Really?
Yeah.
Taking a summer break?
Well, we have a client seminars in June.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, a couple of us. We're working on our client appreciation seminars, which will be coming up in June.
And we're going to have guest speakers. The Alzheimer's Association is going to be our guest speaker this year.
Excellent.
At the client seminar.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are in June, and then we kind of give everybody July off, and then we start up again in August.
All right.
You know, just in time for track season, we give July off. Now that it's starting earlier, right?
Oh, are they really?
I think so.
July even? Oh.
So we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581, our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131, or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Harry Miller.
I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are here this morning at the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. We are two of the partners at the Herzog Law Firm, conveniently located over in Corporate Woods, as we said in the commercial, in Kingston and also in Saratoga Springs.
Yes.
And we would love to talk to you this half hour, wishing you all a very happy Easter, a very happy Passover. And is that appropriate? Is that, how do you? Yes.
That works.
Okay, good. So 476-5900 is the number here at Magic 590. Don't forget the 518-476-5900. If you are outside the local calling area, you can reach Debbie and I toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. So, you know, out of the theory of an executor being a thankless job, I have found a rather, well, we'll see if it's humorous or not. This is a want ad that should go in the newspaper advertising for an executor. All right?
Okay.
Seeking an individual to manage assets during incapacity and to administer assets upon death. Job description, correspond with disgruntled beneficiaries. Manage family drama. Provide accountings to disgruntled beneficiaries. Invest assets, that is, don't lose money or you will hear from disgruntled beneficiaries.
Exactly.
Receive phone calls with kindness on the beneficiary's tongue, inquiring as to when they will receive their inheritance, remembering, of course, quote, it's never about the money.
No.
Compensation is reasonable, but note that beneficiaries will question reasonableness.
Well, someone said to me, who should I make my executor? I'm like, someone you don't like. You know, it's one of those things. It's a thankless job. It really, really is. And I don't know about you, but it seems here lately that there's just more and more contention in the families. Even with trusts that we've had trust terminations that people are just, they're just not
fussing.
Nice.
There's a lot of fussing going on. I don't know what it is with families, but there are a lot of families where, hopefully you don't have these, but many of you probably do. There are just long-seated distances.
Mommy loved me best.
Right.
And she didn't like you.
Yes, this is what we call Smothers Brothers syndrome. Mom always liked you best. So if you're in a family that suffers from Smothers Brothers syndrome, somebody is going to be unhappy. And you know, I think where this comes in is the careful selection of your executor. How should I say this? Some people, if you have a child who's like a control freak, that may not be the best choice for your executor, because they tend to, not that they don't do a good job, but they tend to withhold information and conceal it, not because they're stealing money or anything, but because the access to information and the power to distribute it or not gives them power over their siblings. And I see that a lot if you have a kid who's that way.
So you're saying my mom should choose my sister?
I didn't say you.
I don't think Harry would ever make that mistake of saying that. Even if he felt that way, I don't think he'd ever say it.
Given what you describe your sister, I would say no. He better have the control freak in charge. Okay, then. Sometimes having two kids, sometimes having two of the kids be co-executors works out, but not if they really don't like each other. That could be a real problem. If they seriously don't like each other, which happens sometimes. People think, oh, well, they'll have to agree. Well, let me say something. Don't count on it. And it's a real difficult choice. And so I guess the point of my story here is when you come in to talk to us about your will or your trust and who the person to pick to run it is, we gotta talk about these things. You have to let us know. And I'll ask you, most of us in the office, we're gonna ask you how your kids get along with each other. And, you know, most of the time people know these things to some degree. And the fact of the matter is, you're not gonna be here. You're gonna be gone. All right. You will have passed through the mystic veil, and your kids now are going to revert to however they got along when they were like 12 years old. And the difference is you're not here to put them in time out anymore.
That's true.
They're left to their own devices, uncontrolled and unsupervised.
And if you'd like to give us a call, the phone number here is 518-476-5900. Okay. That's 518-476-5900. Or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. Not all families fight. A lot of times, whenever I'm doing an estate administration, even like a trust termination, when they meet, I'll say, basically, the trust terminates, you can distribute the assets, and then I'll say, how well do you get along with your brothers and sisters? And they'll be like, fine. I'm like, okay, if you get along fine, everybody's on the same page, you can just make distributions. But if you have a sibling that's one of those, you know, people that Harry was describing, you might want to do receipts and releases. I mean, sometimes even though it's just a trust termination, we'll do receipts and releases that says, hey, I've received my money and I release you as trustee.
Absolutely.
Just because you don't want somebody coming back after you going, hey, seriously, I have seen this. Like, the money doesn't come out even. Why did she get a penny more than I did? How come?
Right.
And they'll look at them and go, I will give you the penny. Okay. Here, take a dime.
Because it didn't divide by three.
Exactly.
Somebody had to get the extra penny.
I know.
Okay.
So it's like I'll give you a dime just to walk away.
But it shouldn't have been her. It shouldn't have been her. You know? Exactly. It's no, you're right. Most of the estates that we handle are smooth, simple, easy, No squabbling, no controversy. I would say, and maybe 20% of them, 15 to 20%, there might be some sibling rivalry, some old, and the reasoning is it's all across the board, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had a case, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, there were two sisters who were squabbling over their father's estate, and one of them said to me, you know, I know why she's behaving that way. And I said, why? She said, because I made the cheerleading squad and she didn't.
Ooh.
Never got over it, you know?
Yeah, that's not a reason to not get along on the estate. But there's lots of different reasons why people don't get along. And kids, if they don't get along before you pass away, they're not going to get along after you pass away. And people need to realize that. And sometimes if you have a situation like that, you might want to have like a disinterested third party. You might want to have a corporate trustee. You might want to have an aunt or an uncle or a cousin or somebody that you trust, a close friend.
That's a good alternate choice. Don't pick any of the kids. Pick someone. And I would only probably recommend that if it was like serious.
Well, if it was a big estate.
Serious, big estate, serious differences among the children and things like that. Then we might want to have somebody who is more independent.
Right.
Act as the executor or the trustee. And, you know, I guess as I said, the whole point of this is that we talk about this when you come in and do your estate planning doc. It's not just what you have and where you want it to go. We're trying to avoid problems and arguments and disputes down the road, because that's what you want and that's what we want for you. So.
Yeah, it's difficult. And we have another caller. We have Karen and Troy. Good morning, Karen.
Saratoga County. That's okay. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. I've recently done a trust with you, and I was reviewing this memorandum.
Uh-huh.
And when do you use that? And it's obviously something you would take, I guess, to your bank or something.
Right. The memorandum of trust is kind of a shortcut. Instead of taking your whole trust to the bank, you can just take the memorandum of trust. It says who you are, the grantor. It says who the trustee is. It gives if it's an irrevocable trust, it gives them the EIN number. And so the bank should be able to set up the account in the name of the trust just with that instead of getting the whole trust.
I mean, do you do that? Well, obviously you do it before you pass, but do you... is there a time you do that, or should you do it right away?
Well, if they're assets that you want to put in the trust because you want them to be protected, is it an irrevocable or a revocable trust?
Revocable.
So if it's revocable, you're basically just trying to get everything into the same box. So if something happens to you, it's all together for the backup trustee to step up. So the sooner you do it, the better. But there's really no time frame on it. But you want to make sure that it's in there before you pass away.
So, say, would that incorporate a checking account?
It could, yeah. Are you the trustee?
No.
No. Then I think you have a Medicaid Asset Protection Trust, not a revocable trust. Okay?
No, I don't. I have a revocable trust.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I'd have to, you know what? Best thing would be if you call me, why don't you call... call us. Who in the firm did your legal work?
You did.
I did. Okay. Why don't you call me on Monday or Tuesday, and I'll pull your file, and we can talk about it, okay? Because it may be that all we put in your trust was your house, okay? And at this point, we didn't need to put any bank accounts in. But if I pull the file and talk to you, I can give you a lot more detail.
Okay.
All right? So give me a call early next week. I'm in all week.
And what is your name?
Harry Miller.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
And do you want the phone number for the office?
Yes.
Okay, it's 518-465-7581. And then you can just ask for Harry, and they can put you through to him.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.
Okay.
Have a great weekend.
Okay. Go ahead.
It's confusing.
It is confusing. Yeah, all that stuff. And, you know, we give everybody get a lot of information, get a booklet about all this stuff, but it's still confusing. So we encourage you to call us at the office, so we can unconfuse you. That's what we're trying to do here.
Definitely. I had clients that came in this week that were very concerned because they have a place in Florida, they have a place in New York, and they decided they wanted to move into a senior community, like a 55-plus yeah. community. Mm-hmm. So their house, their Florida place, and their New York place are both in trust. They've been in the irrevocable trust since 2017. And they were in Florida. They called the bank. They were all set to go. They were getting a home equity loan on their house that was in the trust. Mm-hmm. And they met with the banker when they got here. They were all ready to rock and roll. And the banker says, oh, no. Oh, no. We can't give you a home equity loan for your house that's in the trust. And so they came in to see me. They were going to back everything out of the trust. And I said, no, 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 no. I said, there are banks that will give you a home equity loan.
Right.
For your property that's in a trust. And they said, well, the bank told us that in banking law in New York, you cannot get a loan from a house that's in an irrevocable trust. And I said, did you ask them where they got their law degree? And they laughed. And then I told them the bank that they could go to. So all is not lost.
Not all banks will do a home equity or a conventional mortgage to one of these trusts.
Exactly.
But there are banks that will. Mm-hmm. And so if you're looking for that, mm-hmm. please call the office so we can point you in the right direction.
Right.
Because the problem is, if you have to take your house out of the trust to do the loan and then put it back in.
You've lost 2 years. These people would have lost 2 years.
You restart the five-year look back.
So they're going to, they've already met with the bank.
Right.
So, and they know what they're doing now, so they've got it all together. But, you know, that's what I said to them. I'm like, that's what I'm here for. You should have just called me instead of getting all stressed out. I could have answered it over the phone. I could have told you where to go. But it was nice to see them. So they're going to hang on to their house until they get everything all settled. They're building new in this new place.
You know, I know why people didn't call. How much did you charge these people for that phone call, Debbie?
Nothing.
And how much do we usually charge people when they call us on the phone and ask us a question?
Nothing.
They get a bill?
Unless if they call me a lot, they do.
They call me a lot. But they call you, you know, they call you once every 4 years and they got a question, okay? And they're at the bank trying to get a home equity on their house. How much are we going to bill them for?
We're not going to bill them.
We're going to bill them. That's why they don't call. They're afraid they're going to get a bill.
I know.
So well, relax, folks. All right?
We'd rather you do it right. We would rather you give us a call and not be all stressed out. And, you know, we can put your mind at ease. The last couple of weeks, I've been on the phone with all kinds of CPAs, people doing their taxes.
Oh, the tax. Yeah, and everybody. Tax story.
Okay. Oh, no, not a tax story.
So I filed my tax return.
Uh-oh.
Okay. The federal one's okay. All right. Okay. I wrote a check. The New York State one, hey, I'm getting a refund.
Yep.
Okay. So
that's what happened to me, too.
So I filed my tax return, and I'm waiting, you know, just checking because, you know, with the refund, so put it from direct deposit into my account. So last week, I get a notice and demand for taxes due from New York State Tax and Finance, demanding that I pay them the amount of taxes that I owed for the year, the whole amount.
Ooh.
Okay. I said, Well, I look back at my I said, well, okay. So yeah, okay, that's what I owed. I don't dispute that. But what they didn't give me the credit for the amount that was taken out of my paycheck and my W-2.
Uh-huh.
So when you subtract what was taken out from what I owed, I get a $3,000 refund.
Awesome.
Guess what? On their audit notice, they didn't give me credit for the money that was taken out.
Okay. That's funny.
So now I have to. Anyway.
Not fun.
I couldn't file an amended return. The guy at the tax department said, you'll get it faster if you file IT-201X, which is an amended return.
Right.
Except you can't, I can't. The way you fill in the numbers in on it doesn't compute. There's an error. There's an error in the 1040 in the IT-201X that won't let you take credit for what you've already paid. So so I filed a protest. I'll get it worked out in the next couple of months.
That's it. And when you get your money, you'll be like, woohoo.
Woohoo.
Hopefully it's just around the time when you're going to be at Saratoga for the for your race day over there.
Exactly.
That'd
Hopefully
be perfect
race
timing.
Day at the track.
It'll probably be at least August before this gets resolved. Believe me. You know, you ever deal with the tax department? It's a challenge.
It's a challenge, but you know, everybody has a job to do. So
definitely.
So again, we have The Kingston seminar is coming up on May 8th at 2 in the afternoon at the Holiday Inn Express in Kingston, 1835 Ulster Ave in Lake Katrine, and then in May, and that one's on estate planning and Medicaid planning. And then the ones around here in May in Saratoga and Albany are going to be wills versus trusts, which is always fun because it's more of a interesting presentation because it's just about wills and trust. I mean, we go into basic estate planning documents too, but people always want to know, if I have a will, do I need a trust? If I have a trust, do I need a will? You know, it's one of those things. And you really do kind of need both.
But more and more people, I mean, increasingly, more people are moving away from wills. Not that you wouldn't have a will.
Right.
You would have a will and a trust, but the vast majority of your assets, if not all of your assets, would pass through the trust. And so we're going to talk to you about why that's usually a good thing to have happen rather than having your assets pass through a will. And people don't understand the differences between trust and will. So, you know, come on over, meet us, you know, have some coffee and some cookies and chat with you for an hour and a half or so and get you some information. Hey, there's a, you know, we were talking earlier in the first half hour about end-of-life decisions and healthcare proxies and stuff like that, but the to bring your attention, the New York State Legislature this year is considering a bill that would allow terminally ill people to end their lives. This has never gone anywhere in the past.
That's the one that they have in Vermont, right?
Well, this is not physician-assisted suicide. There are six or eight states that have physician-assisted, Oregon, I think, and maybe Vermont, where if you're terminally ill, I mean, you don't decide you're terminally ill. You have to have medical determinations at these things. You can voluntarily end your life if you choose to. Okay, assume you're competent enough to make that decision. You have to make informed consent. This one is not physician-assisted. This is basically the doctor would prescribe the meds, but you have to take them yourself. Okay, so it's somewhat assisted, but they don't go through the process with you. So it's interesting because this is a very, very controversial thing in whenever it's been passed. There's a huge, huge opposition, obviously, from the Catholic Church in New York, which is you know, pretty powerful, a lobbying group as opposed to religious organization, for obvious reasons. It's quite contrary to teaching and doctrine of Catholicism. But it could happen this because, you know, this year, remember, ladies and gentlemen, the governor's office and both houses of the legislature are in the control of the Democratic Party. So it could happen this year. Previously, the Republicans were in control of the Senate, and so it never got very far over there. But I'm going to keep an eye on this because this would be a huge thing. And the governor supports it, interestingly enough. The governor, who is a Roman Catholic, supports this legislation. But I think he sees it, you know, is coming down the road at some point. Keep an eye on it and see where it is. I mean, the problem with these things is when people make these decisions, there has to be a real careful evaluation of their capacity and the influence that others, you know, it's a real murky area of law and life. And I mean, it's both, it's legal, it's medical, it's religious, it's all those things wrapped into a nasty ball of wax.
I had one client who her father had in his healthcare proxy that he didn't want any artificial means to keep him alive.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so he was basically in a vegetative state and he didn't have, you know, there were no feeding tubes, there were nothing. But so she said, well, without the medicine that he's on for his heart, right?
Right.
He would pass away.
Right.
Basically. And so she met with his cardiologist and she said, so based on this, this is artificial means to keep him alive. Mm. And I want to discontinue his meds. And they allowed her to discontinue his meds and he passed. So, you know, I've never heard of, you know, usually it's like no feeding tube, no hydration, no vent, stuff like that. But it was interesting that she specifically said, without these meds to regulate his heart, he he's going to pass away. And so they allowed her to discontinue his meds.
Well, and typically when people go into hospice, most of their meds are discontinued at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go into cardiac arrest, they're not going to take you to the hospital.
Right, they won't resuscitate.
They will not resuscitate you. They will keep you comfortable at home. Now, the thing you have to understand about someone who's in hospice, because I went through this with my mother years ago, if somebody is on hospice and something happens to them and you actually want them taken to the hospital for some reason, you can revoke hospice after you have engaged it and accepted it, because Medicare pays for the hospice program. And then people think like, oh, my God, there's nothing I can do, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, I mean, in my mother's case, she was on hospice, which means, you know, your doctor has to medically believe that you're not going to live more than 6 months to be eligible for the hospice program. It's covered by Medicare. And so people come to the house and they keep you comfortable, like comfort care, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a call one morning from the caretaker that my mother was having trouble breathing. She was gasping for air. And, she had congestive heart failure and a lot of other things wrong with her. And so she was really miserable. So I said, I don't think she would want, you know.
Yeah.
My mother, she hated putting her head on. She didn't like putting her head on the shower. She didn't like breathing. She wouldn't have wanted to suffocate to death. Okay.
Right.
So I said, okay, we're going to revoke hospice. Take her to the ER, get her stabilized, and then bring her back home, which we did. So she went down there, got her stabilized. I think the next day they brought her home. We put her back on hospice. And, you know, a month later, she died quietly in her sleep one night. And I think she, you know, I know I felt better, but I think that's what she would have wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And although I wasn't her healthcare agent, my sister was, whenever anything went wrong with my mother, they would call me and say, what should we do? You know, but they were there and I was here. So it made more sense.
Well, it was nice that you shared. You shared the responsibility. So we have time for maybe one more call. If you want to be the last caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590. I was telling Harry and the other attorneys, we have a meeting every Friday, that I got an email from one of my friends that said, you know, I'm totally devastated. My significant other passed away. So she and he'd never gotten married. They'd been together for quite a while.
Right.
She was down in Florida taking care of her parents, and no one had heard from him for a few days. And one of the friends went over to the house, and apparently he had died of a heart attack. He'd been gone for a couple of days. And we had done Medicaid for his father. And so she said, you know, by chance, did you do any documents for him whenever you did Medicaid for his father? And I'm like, you know, let me check our records. I went back through. Yeah, no, we didn't do anything for him. And then another thing is, he was kind of estranged from his sister.
Oh.
And we dealt with his sister a lot for the Medicaid. And she was like, and do you have a phone number for the sister? So Stacy dug through the electronic file on the computer, because obviously archives is where the file is. She found a fax that the sister had sent us. So I was able to send them the phone number for the sister.
She didn't even know. They had to get in touch with her.
So, I mean, and they're young. So, you know, they're in their 50s. So that's one of those things. People that think that it can't happen to them, it does.
And especially if you're in a non-marital relationship with someone, whether you call it a significant other or domestic partner or whatever the heck it is, it's even more important that you have legal documents in effect, because this person has no legal standing to do anything. They don't have any standing with respect to your medical care and treatment. They have absolutely no standing with respect to inheritance of assets.
Nope.
So unless all their property is in joint names, which is probably, you know, most people wouldn't be.
Right.
I mean, the guy's going to be deemed to have died without a will.
Mm-hmm.
And if his parents are deceased,
they're gone.
Everything's going to go to his sister, right?
Right, and she was estranged.
He had no kids?
Nope.
Yeah.
No kids. I mean, and that's the thing, too. You don't think about those things, but the sister's going to be in charge. So let's just say my friend had a bunch of stuff over his house.
She'll never see it again.
She'll never see it again, because if the sister doesn't like her, it'd be like, you know, it's mine. It's in the house. It's mine. You're never going to see it again. I mean, I'm sure that everything will get worked out, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes
it all depends on the family dynamics. And so you got to think about those things. I mean, this is not all real cheery stuff we can talk about for Easter, but, you know, the thing is, tomorrow's Easter, and a lot of families are going to be together for Easter dinner and church services and stuff like that, and over the weekend for Passover, if you're Jewish. And it's a great opportunity to you know, sit around while you're watching a golf match tomorrow, or just, you know, having a beer with your dad or something, and just talk about this stuff. Maybe you don't know whether your mother and father have a health care proxy or a living will, and who the heck's going to make decisions if something happens to one of them and the other one isn't able to react or has predeceased. It's an important thing for kids to know about. Spouses talk about these things more with each other than parents and children do. And so use the weekend if you can. You know, don't spend a lot of time on it, but, you know.
Hey, pass the ham, and by the way, do you have a will?
By the way, do you have a will? and am I in it? Okay.
You know, so it's
as
like.
Debbie always says, where there's a will, there's a relative. Right?
Exactly. You guys have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.